Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
The truth is funny. With Colette Steffen, we'll have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network as she provides energetic shifts and consistent results in every area of life, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success. Many people who shift out of limiting beliefs roar with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. The truth is funny. Shift happens. Feel instant relief. Stay tuned for more fun and release struggle and suffering. And now, here's your host, Colette Steffen.
Today, your guest host, Karen Benton, is here. Karen is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. Joyful, abundant, and bursting with energy. Here is your guest host, Karen Benton.
Welcome to The Truth is Funny on Transformation Talk Radio. I am Karen Benton, and I am so honored to be a regular guest host for Colette on her powerful radio show every third Wednesday of the month. Please stay tuned for the next hour as we explore cutting-edge information and experiences to assist you in unraveling the capacity within you to solve life's most challenging problems. This shift happens every Wednesday at 8 a.m. live on the airwaves and the archives. Podcasts are available for every show we do at thetruthisfunny.com, transformationtalkradio.com, and for the shows that I host every third Wednesday of the month, you can find them at karenbetton.com. The work we explore in these shows is designed with the intention of enlivening within each listener their own capacity to create and experience transformation in their lives. Repeated listening to the podcast has been reported to be a powerful gateway to change. It is my honor and pleasure to share this powerful hour with you and provide the opportunity to call in live with comments, questions, or shares. Together, we can transform life's conflicts and challenges into possibilities with ease and fun. We love to hear from you. Feel free to call in at 1-800-930-2819. I am really thrilled about our guest today. Her name is Lisa Reinhart. And if you ever get the chance to meet her, she just radiates joy. She is, in my humble opinion, the epitome of a modern day meditation master. Spend a few moments in her presence and you can immediately feel the deep ease and joy that effortlessly emanates from her core. And needless to say, this is why I was so excited to seek out her presence with us in our community on this show. Lisa lived in Asia 30 years ago for 11 years, studying and practicing meditation with many of the greatest meditation masters of the 20th century who had escaped from Tibet and were living in exile in the Himalayas. She was fortunate to immerse herself in that world and see firsthand the impact made when people spend a lifetime committed to meditation. She returned to the United States, steeped in enthusiasm and commitment for this life-altering path, only to find that it would take another 16 years before mindfulness became a thing. In the meantime, she started an organic chocolate company called Way of Chocolate to subversively teach meditation by enticing people to let the chocolate melt slowly in their mouths. Yum. In addition to being founder and owner of Way of Chocolate, she offers one-on-one meditation consultations for those who are curious about or wish to revitalize and fine-tune their existing practice. She invites her community and world at large to try a piece of chocolate, explore a chocolate meditation, and immerse yourself in the delight in bringing meditation into every aspect of life while making mindfulness as simple and fun as eating a piece of chocolate. Oh, dear Lisa, we are so excited to have you. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Karen. Oh, you're so kind. That was really very beautiful. Well,
I mean, I have to say one of the most, I would say you're one of the most joyful people I'd ever met in my life when I came in contact. And I think one of our mutual friends sort of said, when you meet you, you're like, oh, I want some of that. What do you do?
That's so funny.
And I have so many questions for you. But the first thing that I think, that I would be interested to even know is, you know, can you describe the motivation or the inspiration or the place in life that you were, or whatever you feel to share, that led you to immerse yourself in this culture, you know, 30 years ago? It sounds like, was that the late 70s, maybe?
It was mid-80s. I graduated from the University of Rochester, and they had a fellowship for one person to go to France, to a sister city, to teach English there. And then they would take one, you know, coming each direction. And they didn't have one. And they were really embarrassed because I was not a French major. I was an English and history major, and I barely had two semesters of French. But they went down the whole list, and they couldn't find anyone. And they finally got to me, and I said, yes. And so I got this fellowship to go to France. And once I was there, I spent the first year there in Brittany and loved it. And then I thought, why would I go home? So I moved to Paris and I became a nanny for an American family. And while I was there, a neighbor said, gee, do you want to go and explore this Buddhist center that's on the other side of town? I said, oh, yeah. So we went and yeah, that's a funny story in and of itself. But I met someone who eventually became my teacher.
Were you already practicing meditation at that point?
No. You know, that was a funny thing because in college I had a dear friend who took me to Zen meditation. And once I walked in, I kind of had that like, oh, you know, something important is happening here. And I really wanted to do it. And I looked around and I realized, oh, these people, everybody's wearing sweatpants. And I never was athletic. I didn't own sweatpants. I'm like, I need sweatpants in order to do this. You know? So I went on this big expedition. I got these sweatpants. I was so proud of myself. I came back to meditate and I went by myself the next time. As I'm sitting there, the Zen monk starts giving a talk and he talked about the importance of color. And then I looked to the right and I looked to the left and I realized that everyone in the place was wearing black. And I looked down and I was wearing bright red sweatpants. And I was so embarrassed. I didn't go back. And so that had been my introduction to meditation, like this push-pull, like I think I belong there, but I didn't really belong there. And so I ended up going to the center in Paris. What happened was, like, I had that burst of like, oh, I know what to do. So I walked into this Tibetan Buddhist temple. It's beautiful. It's in the Bois de Vincennes on the southeast side of Paris. And into the shrine room, and I turned and put my back to the shrine, and I faced the wall like they do in Zen meditation. And this strange little man, eventually he tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, you know, he said, if you want, you can turn around and look at the Buddha. And I turned around, and I looked, and everything in that room was red and gold. Oh, I thought, oh, I think I'm home. And so that was my teacher. And eventually I went back to Asia with him.
So, and how did he become your teacher? You just started, showing up at his teachings. It seems like a silly question, but it's like, for some of us, it's like, how does that happen?
Well, yeah. And it's a good question because I think it's different for everybody. And he's the kind of teacher who's totally undercover. Like nobody knows he's a teacher. And so it wasn't obvious. And I just started hanging out because, you know, I knew in my core that this person was different. Mm. And they, like you say, like I want some of that, whatever that is, I want some of that. And so we just started hanging out together. And then, you know, over time, it's like the clouds parted and I could see things more as they were. I was like, oh, yeah, this is important. There is stuff going on here.
So you said we just started hanging out together. I'm going to go home with this more because I love this idea of expanding for many of us our sort of framework of which we receive teachings, you know, that it has to be in a formalized classroom or that, you know, that you have to find it online or that it's a well-named person. And you're not even saying you went to a you know, a formalized teaching, you started hanging out with him. Like there was a connection and you followed it. Yeah. Is that, would you?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah. And that's a really good point, because it's not about name recognition. It's not about who has the best marketing. It's not about who's offering, you know, the weekend, the seminar that fits into my schedule. Right. It really, it goes back to a resonance. And, you know, and for me, I would say it goes back to past connection. And it's really, you know, unpredictable where you find that. You do have to be open.
Right. You can feel that, right? And I mean, for me, I'm continually exploring this idea of using my sense of feeling and awareness to guide where I'm going. And it comes in conflict with, you know, these structures and ideas of how it's supposed to be done. In particular, because I have teenagers, right? And we're kind of, you know, everybody's going with what they normally do. So I love the idea that, you know, you're someone I met, I am completely blown away by the energy that you have. And yet you, the piece that you emphasize is you know, came to a point in your life and you followed a sense and a feeling and not a structure.
That's true. And it's funny because that's one of the hardest things for human beings to do, I think, is to, when we encounter the unknown, because we really like to have a handle on things. And maybe there's an advantage, you know, because I was, what, 20, 22 years old. And so there's that sense of adventure. And we tend to dampen that down as we get older. But it's really, there's a real invitation there to kind of open that up to that sense of wonder that we had when we were younger.
It's amazing. And we actually have to take a break. But I love, even what you're saying, it's sort of this little sparkly feeling inside myself that yes, there, you know, the known is something we emphasize in our world, and building the ability for the unknown to be a powerful option as well is so important. And I can't wait to explore more of that when we come back after the commercial with you, of how you allow that to be a, you know, almost a rudder in your life. And so we can learn from that. So you are on The Truth is Funny, and I have my amazing guest of Lisa Reinhart, and we will be right back to take your calls if you have any, 1-800-930-2819, and we'll be exploring more with Lisa on these meditating with masters, exploring a sensing and feeling in your life and opportunity maybe in unknown ways.
Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy L., on the Tracy L. Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at TracyLClark.com.
Goddess Light Shamanic Healer Brie Gibbs guides us through the ascending worlds, bringing forth knowledge and truth. As a light creator, she is here to provide new information needed at this time in our evolution. Join Brie as she shares messages from guides, spirits, ascended masters, goddesses, and more. Tune in Thursdays at 3 p.m. Pacific for the Dr. Brie Show, The Goddess Emergence, and live the authentic life.
Have you ever wondered if there's a way to heal the deep, hidden inner issues, wounds, beliefs, and traumas? The Journey into Spiritual Healing engages people in all areas of their lives to heal themselves and others. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Dr. Jaffe brings conversations of healing of body, mind, and spirit as he merges the excellence of traditional medicine with the beauty of spiritual healing. For more information about Dr. Jaffe, this show, and his work, visit drjaffemd.com.
Hi, I'm Laura Meeks, and the most common problem that my clients face is all work and no play. This is why I created Fly High Living. I help you develop a balanced life plan and guide you to a place where you love to wake up in the morning.
call 888-666-1570 or go to flyhighliving.com to sign up for the 4-week Flight Plan for Life course.
Dream on, fly high, and live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Laura Meeks guides you in finding your unique gifts and bringing them to life. As a certified life coach, speaker, and veteran bomber pilot for the U.S. Air Force, Laura knows how to follow a dream. She is ready to support you so you can dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. For more information on Laura and her work, visit flyhighliving.com.
Golden Otter Divinations Radio, where the metaphysical meets the mainstream with Autumn Seibel. Tune in the first Friday every month at 9 a.m. Pacific as Autumn, educator, health coach, and medium, explores metaphysical and mainstream strategies on how to elevate your level of conscious living. Draw in the abundance that is yours by divine right. For more information about working with Autumn, visit goldenotter.us. That's golden like the precious metal and otter like the precious animal.us.
So we are back on The Truth is Funny, and I am Karen Benton, your guest host on the third Wednesday of every month. My guest today is Lisa Reinhardt, founder and owner of Way Chocolate and, in my opinion, meditation master. So before we continue, Lisa, can you please share your contact information with our audience? So if there's anyone listening that would like to be able to get in contact with you with questions or consultations, they would be able to find you.
Yes, thank you. So you can find me. We have actually two websites, and both of them use the word Wei, spelled W-E-I. It comes from Mandarin Chinese, and it's from the old Lao Tzu expression, Wei Wu Wei, which kind of means transformative action. So So one website is weiofchocolate.com, W-E-I-O-F chocolate.com. And the other is waywisdom.com. And that's where I started putting more of the information that's strictly about meditation, is weiwisdom.com. And you can find me on either of those places.
And then they can contact you if they,
yes.
Which I highly recommend, explore personalized meditation. We'll get into that a little bit further down in the show, but just explore this idea that you can harness a meditation practice that's uniquely aligned to you, which can take you to completely different heights. So we were exploring the power of following, you know, the sense and feeling that you have that led you to your teachers and the journey that you had with that. So you mentioned, and I mentioned in the bio, before we get into some of the stories about it, but you mentioned that you notice that people that dedicated themselves to meditation had very palpable benefits. And maybe you would explore in your own words how you would summarize that and what you noticed or what you felt or...
Yeah, that's a really good question, because for me, that was one of the biggest bonuses, I guess, of actually going to Asia, because in those years... there were people who had escaped from Tibet, who were living in Nepal and India. Actually, there still are, but they had a lifetime of meditation practice behind them. And that wasn't as common to find in this country. Like, I had never encountered anyone here yet who had that kind of quality or out of that experience. And so for me, that was one of the most amazing things, was that you could actually walk into a room and feel the effect of their meditation. So it took it from being like, people talk about compassion, and some people have, you know, really old, uninformed ideas about compassion, and they think it almost makes people weak. But in fact, these people were you know, had such strength and such power and such joy that came from this practice that overflowed from them in a way that felt palpable. Like, it was interesting. At one point, I was in Bodh Gaya India, which is the place where the Buddha actually attained enlightenment 2,500 years ago. So people still go there from all over the world to be in this place. And this was probably 1987. And I heard that a great master was there. And so I went to see him. And it was probably the strongest experience I had had of this up until that point. And there were four of us, and we walked into the room. And in the room, like visually, what you would have seen is a bed with a very old, very frail man in the bed. Mm-hmm. And yet when I walked into that room, I felt like I hit a cloud. Like I felt like I hit almost like a soft airbag of something that I just didn't even know what it was that blew all of the thoughts out of my head in that moment. And there was something in that room that was so much bigger than that frail body on the bed. And I couldn't talk. Like when we left, I couldn't even move my jaw to talk. And there were four people who walked into the room at the same time. And as it turned out later, there were four very different experiences. Mm. And so that's interesting in and of itself, is that part of it, like we spoke earlier, part of it is like, we would say in Buddhism, we call it karmic connection, like past connection. Part of it is openness. Part of it is readiness. Part of it is the individual. Like, who knows? Like, there's a million factors that feed into it. And like you say, there are everyone has their unique path. Mm-hmm. But for me, that particular meditation master was extremely, like, present, powerful, palpable, this, like, whoosh feeling of the power of meditation.
Mm, that's great. And there you were, you know, in the middle of India.
Yeah.
We always think we need to have logical reasons to make big steps in our lives. And by our standard definition of logical, this was, didn't fall in any of that, which I love because, well, for so many reasons. But so my next question is this concept of joy. I think many people, myself included, consider meditation not necessarily synonymous with joy, you know, that it has right. This seriousness piece to it. Could you enlighten us a bit on that? on you know, because it's funny, people that meditate are joyful. Now, is meditation joyful? And if you find meditation not joyful, does that mean it's not for you? I think so many of us sort of struggle with that.
Right. And that is such a good question. And it's so funny because I think the answer lies beyond logic.
You know, again,
and that might, you know, be informative too. But I mean, it's that funny interplay between, like, there's that discipline around meditation. And a lot of people, like, if I ask them, well, why do you meditate? And they say, oh, I just want to relax. You know, I just want to find peace. And sometimes that makes me laugh because, you know, yes, peace and relaxation are sometimes an experience with meditation. But the actual work of meditation can be really uncomfortable.
Oh, yes. You know, Thank you.
And just because it's uncomfortable, believe me, you're not doing it wrong.
I'm just learning that now. I mean, that is why I should have had you on here years ago. I mean, that's so funny because you do. I think, you know, we go from this, well, you follow the senses and feelings that feel drawn to you, yet then we invite you, you know, in this container of expansion to also, would you say, sit with your uncomfortableness?
Yeah. That and everything else, you know.
Exactly. I'm squirming at the thought of how it feels some days.
I know. I think this particular week, like this week for me, has been really one of those squirmy weeks. And I don't know if it's because we're headed into a big full moon or, you know, exactly what's going on. But part of me is watching the uncomfortableness and kind of just chuckling like, wow, you got, you know, there's a lot of undercurrent right now.
Yeah.
And it can be the undercurrent of impatience, the undercurrent of irritation. It can be a fear of missing out. Like, you know, like we can be pulled in all kinds of different directions. But it's nice if, I mean, one of the reasons why we meditate with the breath is because it gives us that habit of finding out how to notice what's really going on. Mm. Because once we start noticing, then we can notice everything, right? So then we notice that undercurrent. We notice we're being pulled into irritation or impatience or whatever. And we don't have to let it engulf us. We can welcome it. We can accept it. We can bring it into more of a spaciousness, a vastness that is the ground that we find when we have a regular meditation practice.
And I love, you mentioned undercurrents, you know, and for me, that brings up a sense of ease, comfort, and I describe it, that it's not personal, meaning if I'm feeling agitated, it's not because I stay, you know, I'm terrible.
Right.
which is a leap that my brain likes to go to a lot. And that, you know, I think what you're saying is creating space that the things that are happening are outside of what your mind is saying they're happening because of. You know, they could be many reasons. That are so far beyond personal, which I think it feels so powerful for me. And exploring that when it arises, okay, if it helps you, would you say that if it helps you to explore, this may not be personal, to sit with it even more? What creates a space to sit with it, that's an okay practice in meditation? Is that what you're saying?
It's a hugely important practice in meditation. It's not just okay. It's like, wow, if you can get to that, then you have the key in your hand. Mm. Yeah, beautiful. Hugely important to welcome it in, because this is a really important point I'd love to go back to and maybe after the break. But I think when we're having a practice, we get to a point where we kind of think, I should be beyond this. Mm. I should not be feeling this right now. I should, you know, full of shoulds about
what. Kind of like me when I was trying to find my headset before this. I was like, I should be beyond this. How many times have I done this radio show? I shouldn't be looking for my headset when I've got 2 seconds to go.
and it's like a pivotal point where we can really take it to the next level. When we recognize that there is that part of us that wants us to have this perfect spiritual practice.
I find that so powerful. Just like applying it to your day. If you can do it in meditation, wow, then it becomes, right? I mean, it sounds what you're saying. Then it's going to start to pervade your everyday life. You're going to find the ability to find space for yourself in however your life is showing up. And it's the practice. Wow.
I can't believe that.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Okay. So this is so exciting. So we are talking with Lisa Reinhart, and we are here at the Transformation Talk Radio on The Truth is Funny. And we will be right back after the break to continue this enlivening discussion about meditation, exploring what Lisa was mentioning about I should be past this, that idea that shows up in our lives that, you know, we struggle with thinking that we need to be more than we are. And we're also going to nudge her to tell us, you know, one or two of her great stories from her experiences in the Himalayas. So stay tuned and we'll be right back.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Have you ever wondered how you might feel differently if the books were full of her instead of him? What if your history lesson was filled with powerful women leaders and rulers? As a woman, would you feel more empowered? As a man, would you see women differently? I'm Megan Edge. I'd love for you to join me on my radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I hope to see you there.
Are you looking for the perfect setting for your next workshop or retreat? At Spirit Fire Meditative Retreat Center, cultivating consciousness is what we do best. Our guests count on us to create an atmosphere that supports serenity and well-being. We lead from the heart and create space for the mind. Freshly prepared meals designed with local and organic ingredients, 95 acres of beautiful woods and pastures, and a facility built with green in mind. This is what you'll find at Spirit Fire. For more information, visit spiritfireretreatcenter.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
If you have been struggling with fear and anxiety, you know how debilitating these emotions can be. You constantly doubt yourself, you can't make decisions, and feel more and more insecure and stuck. Dr. Friedman Schaub's book, The Fear and Anxiety Solution, will provide you with the insights and tools to break through these challenges. Through a step-by-step process, Dr. Schaub explains how to resolve the subconscious root causes of fear and anxiety and build a strong foundation of inner peace and confidence. Visit www.thefearandanxietysolution.com and get your copy now.
Order your copy of Dr. Friedman Schaub's The Fear and Anxiety Solution today. Visit thefearandanxietysolution.com for more information.
This is Karen Benton, and I am a regular guest host on the Truth is Funny talk radio show on the third Wednesday of every month. And I have here with me what I consider my coin for her is a modern day meditation master. And we've been discussing all these amazing pearls about meditation, the advantages of a meditation practice. And the last point that we were touching on, that Lisa brought up is this idea of I could be or I should be doing it better at this point. And is there anything else that you feel drawn to, you know, provide your wisdom with for the community on this level of, you know, when you're in that meditation place and you're thinking you should be doing it better?
Yeah, I mean, it's so important. There's a lot of things around that. Like one of them is just, you and I being at this particular age, I felt that when I reached like middle age-ish and I thought, oh, I was supposed to have it all figured out by now. I was supposed to have it all, you know, nailed and done right and so on top of things. And my spiritual practice was supposed to be so this or so that. And I realized, luckily, at some point that no. But that's actually the point of middle age or any age is really that you have the chance now to unravel all of those things that we either didn't have the support for, the understanding of, the experience for. It's like we kind of get to go back and take care of our younger selves who, you know, just through the course of life, I think we're all thrown into a lot of experiences that we don't have the tools to handle at the time, but you know, we do the best we can. Mm. And then middle age gives us that kind of sense of support. And, you know, we've got all these life experiences behind us. We have a lot more tools and we can go back and kind of collect all of that and really fold it into our compassion practice. And so that goes back to like every moment if you're trying to meditate and you've got that voice that says you should be doing it better, you know, you can say, yeah, I hear you, you know, come and join me. Come and join me, this part that doubts, this part that wants us to do it right, you know, this part that is afraid. Come and join us. And you kind of fold everything into this practice of compassion. Because I know for the first, you know, I don't know how many decades I spent really trying to develop a sense of compassion that I radiated out like a beacon, feeling like that was the way to do it, is to be this beacon to put it out in the world. And that's wonderful. But at some point, someone pointed out to me that, you know, if you don't include yourself in that, you know, beacon of compassion, that light of compassion, if it doesn't fill you too, there's a big limit on what you can accomplish. And so then it became a moment of like turning it back and filling myself and treating myself with that level of compassion that I had been trying to offer to others. And once that piece fell into place, it seemed like everything got a lot more powerful and more ease and more joy.
And the which could be how working with, you know, with an individual support on meditation can really help you to create more space for yourself, right? Because the sort of finding the unique form of meditation that's aligned to you rather than one that has been presented to you in a, you know, in a meditation class or a yoga class that's designed for everyone, finding that unique piece that helps you have a deeper sense of compassion for yourself so that you can.
Right. Just kind of turn the key and unlock that part of the path for you.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Lisa, I was wondering if you would share with us maybe, you know, one of your fun stories that you think the audience might be interested in, which I think would be any one of them, from your time sitting with the meditation masters in the Himalayas when they're, you know, here you are with these exiled masters. And what do you have to share with us that?
Wow. Well, there's one story that comes to mind that I really love, and I kind of can't even believe that it happened. But it was one of the times I was in Bodh Gaya, the place I mentioned before. It's in north central India where the Buddha attained enlightenment. And anyway, there's something about that place that's just magical because of all of the people who come there, even to this day, with beautiful aspirations, beautiful, you know, desire to benefit all beings. And so that really radiates throughout that place. But I was in that place and I was with some other people and I had kind of inspired them to come. And it was one of those times when, like we talked about, things didn't seem to be going very well. You know, like everybody was really uncomfortable. They were running up against a lot of old stuff, you know, and it was quite difficult. And it really made me doubt myself. And I thought, wow, what am I doing? You know, like, what did I do to invite these people here? You know, like, boy, I think I made a big mistake. I'm really in over my head. And so in one of those days where I was filled with doubt, I used to go outside and I would have breakfast every day at this place. And I'd just sit on like a picnic bench, you know, and eat breakfast. And I was sitting there one day I had been in this place, you know, like pretty much every winter for several years, but I had missed a year or two. And as I was sitting there, a dog walked by and it stopped and it did a double take. And so flashback to about 2 years before where I had been doing the same thing. I've been there alone pretty much. I've been doing retreat and I go outside and have breakfast every day. And there had been a dog that was so incredibly skinny that I would go and I'd buy a little loaf of bread for 2 rupees, which is like 8 cents. And I would tear it into small bits because I was afraid if I gave it a whole piece of bread that it might choke. And it was just in such bad shape. And I'd feed this dog every day as I had breakfast. And I didn't have much money, but I could spare 8 cents, you know? And so it was something that I could do made me feel better about the situation because, boy, the dog was in bad shape. So flash forward, you know, the 2 years, this dog walks by, it does a double take, and it starts dancing around wildly. And I looked at the dog and honestly had not thought about that one from 2 years before, since the day I left. You know, it was just like life goes on and I don't think. And there I was, and this dog started dancing wildly and ran over to the bread shop. And I didn't recognize the dog because it was so healthy and you know, in such good shape. And it was one of those moments where it reminded me of what my teachers had said, which is, if you can do something positive, do it, no matter how small. And if you can stop yourself from doing something negative, do it, no matter how small. Because things make a difference. And I think one of the biggest things is we're all afraid that we aren't going to make a difference in this world. You know, like we doubt our impact. And the truth is that we have a huge impact. And that, which reminds me of another quick story, if I can go there, is in that same time period, it's like I was a little slow and I didn't get the message completely the first time. And so some other things happened and I ended up riding in this, tuk-tuk thing, like a motorized tricycle thing, back from a train station with this guy that I didn't know. And we started having a conversation and he started telling me a story about a hiker who had been lost in Nepal a couple years before. And I said, oh, yeah, I heard about that. But I never heard the end of the story. Tell me the end of the story. And so flashback again to a couple of years before, I had been in Boat Gaya and I got a message that my teacher was going to fly into Kathmandu. Would I meet him there? Because he was bringing someone. I'm like, oh, sure, you know, easy, easy peasy, right? So I take the bus from Kathmandu and it's 12, it took me 6 or 8 hours to get to the border on one of these, you know, really local buses. I had to stay overnight at the border. It was really hellish. It was like New Year's Eve and it was a crazy town. It was all kinds of things happening. And then I got all the way up to Kathmandu, which is a hairpin turn road, takes another 8 or 12 hours. And so I finally got to the Kathmandu, went to the airport, went to meet my teacher. And I waited and I waited and I waited and he didn't see him coming. And then I saw this woman who was really, distraught. And so I went over to her and I said, can I help you? And she said, I just landed from Australia. The embassy asked me to come. My brother is lost in the mountains. And I'm thinking, ooh, that's not good. When they call the family, that's not good. And she said, they're supposed to be here to meet me and they aren't. And so I talked to her for a minute and I said, well, you know, I said, this place is kind of different from where you're from. And this might sound crazy to you, but I'm going to give you the name of a Tibetan Lama. And I gave her the name and the monastery and the town. And I said, if they can't help you at the embassy, if they can't find your brother, then go here and ask this Lama, because I've heard he's really good at finding people. And that was it. And I left her with that information. The embassy came. She went away. I went back to wait for my teacher, and he never arrived. And so I'd made this massive journey and gone to the airport and he wasn't there. And so then finally I went back home, you know, where I stayed. And then I got a message that, oh, not this Tuesday, next Tuesday. And that was pretty typical in those days, right? Because we had no cell phones. We had no email. We had, you know, we're lucky if we had a fax and it was in the town and you'd have to go collect it. And you know, that was it. Like, you can't be angry. You can't be upset. That's just the way it rolls. And so then flashback. So there we are. So here I'm in this tuk-tuk with this guy who's telling me the story about the guy we lost in the mountains. And I'm like, oh, I never heard the end of the story. What happened? And he said, well, he said, it was quite amazing. He said, they looked everywhere for him. They sent out helicopters. They sent out search teams. And he missed his plane. He never showed up. And then finally, on the 42nd day, they found him in a cave eating his last candy bar. And I said, oh, my God, that's amazing. I said, how did they find him? And he said, some Tibetan Lama told him where to look. And then I was like.
That's what you were. I mean, that's funny. Like you go into that. What was wrong with me? Why did I get there? My teacher, you know, all of those sort of self-destructive thoughts, or kind of be open to it being revealed to you why your day took a detour or why you went somewhere. And look at that, you had such palpable evidence.
Yeah. And you know what I think is really amazing about this story is not that it happened, because honestly, I think this probably happens to every one of us all the time. Mm-hmm. I think what's amazing about it is that I actually got to hear the end of the story.
Yes, right. Can you imagine, right? If everything we've ever done is actually that powerful, we just, you know, it's not necessary for us to know that. Wow, that's really neat. Well, so I really want to hear, how did you go from this amazing experience to exploring your delicious, delicious chocolate? Which, mind you, when I heard that for the first time, I was like, chocolate meditation? What? Again, that said, I thought meditation was hard and serious and we're going to add chocolate into it. That's actually brilliant.
Well, it was funny because, so you can imagine, right? I have all these experiences in Asia and I come back to the US and I'm all charged up about meditation. And so every person, you know, I can grab, I'm trying to tell about meditation. And every time I do, they get that look in their eyes like, oh no, you know, that big eye, deer in the headlights, like, I tried that once. I'm not good at it. You know, my mind is too busy. I don't have time, you know, and then they break away. It's like, oh, and I would get sad because I think, oh my goodness, like, I know people are looking for the same things, right? Everybody wants peace and happiness and joy and compassion and insight. You know, it's like, these are all the things that I saw happen when people meditate regularly. But it was, how do we get there in our modern life? Because people are not going to throw away their iPhones these days. They're not going to leave their job, their family, their country, and go live in a cave in the Himalayas. So one day I had this aha eating a piece of chocolate, and I realized that chocolate is always a yes. And nobody says, I'm not good at it, I don't have time, I'm too busy. I thought, okay, you know, here's the path. We can be subversive here. We just tell people, you don't even have to, you know, in those days, I never even used the word, because there was so much misinformation about meditation, and really there still is, we're still trying to squash the thoughts and we're trying to quiet the mind and we're trying, you know, like, be militant about it. It's like, nah, it's not really like that. And so I thought, just have people experience it, because if you can let, you know, a really exquisite piece of chocolate melt in your mouth, if you're anywhere but the present moment, then don't eat the chocolate, right? Save it for later, because there's no point wasting good chocolate.
And that is what I love is a lot of the things that I do, you know, we focus so much on the action and the form, and not necessarily where's our focus and where's our awareness when we're there.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, that's a key point, because really, once you know that, then everything can be part of the path, right? It's really, so like I said before, like, following the breath is a really good way to train, so that you get used to, like, it's almost like if you can imagine a dog picking up its puppy and placing it in a safe place, right? You don't bite the neck hard, right? You pick it up with your teeth, yes, but then you place it over here. And it's the same thing with your attention. You know, you pick it up and you put it where you want it, and you're purposeful, but you're not damaging.
Right. Yeah.
And so do that with a breath. You learn how to do that with a breath. With a chocolate, it's just natural, right? It's like, wow, like, just sink into the texture, the flavor, just, you know, And without you even having to think about it, you've just taken your awareness and placed it in that, you know, one spot. Mm. Nobody has to tell you how, like, you know that. And so we all can have that experience. And then once you realize, like you say, oh, that's what I'm doing, then it's like, oh, well, I can take my awareness and I can put my awareness down on my right hip. And I can, oh, notice that tension there? Oh, I didn't know that before. I never felt that before. But now that I place my awareness there, I feel the tension and I can also kind of explore it. Like, I don't have to squelch it. The point is not to cover these things up, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not to flatten. It's not to, like, we like to use the word transcend, but I think a lot of times when we use the word transcend, we mean ignore. And this is different. This is like, no, I'm really going to go there because I want to feel that, because I want to know that. And once we know and accept and welcome It's interesting how things just naturally, you know, unfurl, unravel, shift on their own.
There is a wisdom that is, you know, that is just waiting to partake. Sometimes it may actually be suppressed, right, by our fear that there's something wrong or that we're doing it wrong, you know, regardless of what we're engaged in, right? Whether, even if it's just meditation. And from what you're saying, it really, like, it's inspiring me to make it an even bigger part of my life as like a tool or a practice of playing, you know, in this field of that then might show up in your daily life, your ability to hold space for yourself, your ability to be aware of your body, mind, so that you can use your own unique tools to sit with it, allow something other than your mind or your thoughts to move it through, you know, when you're creating some space outside of the,
The space part is key. And that's where I love a regular meditation practice, because the first thing that I notice happens is that you have a perspective that didn't exist before. Instead of being like face first into everything, there's a spaciousness around you that allows you to see, first of all, notice. I mean, wow, noticing is like so important. Like, you don't have to fix it. Like, I was a big fixer person, like, you know, find me a problem, I'll fix it. But if you can first allow the spaciousness to just notice, then sometimes it dissolves on its own. It doesn't require fixing, because the fixer in me is the part that says there's something wrong here and I'm here to make it right. Mm. And that's a little too binary.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, on that note, I think you've already expressed how, you know, chocolate can be made healthy, particularly when you care like your company does for the highest quality ingredients. And I would wonder if you would gift us with maybe a 1 minute little meditation that you guide us in, that maybe users of your chocolate, customers of users of your chocolate, that sounds like. But yes, that's too funny. Sorry. Yes, but why not, right? customers of your chocolate, people eating your chocolate, could maybe explore with. But it's also available on your website. But, you know, whatever you feel drawn to spontaneously share with us for about 1 minute of a meditation.
Yeah. I mean, you can do this with or without chocolate. Of course, with chocolate is always better.
Everything's better with chocolate.
But the idea is that, you know, you look at the piece of chocolate and you see it, and then you put it in your mouth. And then you just let it rest on your tongue. You can rub the bottom with your tongue. And the beautiful thing about chocolate is that your body heat will melt it. And as it melts, one of the things that I like to explore is just this idea that a moment ago you had something that was, we would say, quite obviously other. Like, it's chocolate, it's not me, it's other. But when you melt it in your mouth, and within a minute or so, what you'll find is it's liquefying and it's rolling down your throat. And within a certain period of time, it becomes indistinguishable, inseparable from us. And it really raises that question about, what does it mean, you know, self and other? How does self and other actually exist if it does at all? Because a moment ago, it seemed like something other, and within minutes, it will be integrated into our cells, and nobody can say, this is chocolate and this is not, this is me, this is not. And it really gives us a jumping off point for exploring, like, wow, How do we exist in the world? Like, when I breathe in, and I breathe in all the things from the outside world, and then they become integrated in my blood and my cells, you know, and I breathe out and things go out. I mean, we could do a whole hour on this, but but it's an interesting, you know, just plant that seed that, wow, I'm taking in the world, I'm taking in Ecuador, I'm taking in, you know, the intention, Lisa's intention. I mean, all these things are in that chocolate in that moment.
And beautiful. And they can get you, listeners could find more meditations on your website, right?
Yeah. There, you know, there's more on the Way Wisdom website. There's a meditation page there. And then if they sign up on our email list on the chocolate website, then we will send them meditations.
Meditations. Oh, Alicia, it has been such a pleasure to connect with you today on this hour. I really fully enjoyed it. And I can feel the ease in my own body and just interacting with your beautiful voice and presence, even through the phone, which again expands our idea of what can happen without physical presence. And it's been such a pleasure to connect with all of you out there in the audience. A big thank you to Carter for helping us, as you always do, guiding us and the music and the choice. And again, to you, Lisa, for being on the show. For the callers who are calling in or not calling in or lurking, you're all a part of this community and you're a part of what we are diving into and exploring and expanding. And Colette will be back next week on Wednesday at 8 a.m. And you know how to get in touch with Lisa. You know how to get in touch with me and exploring all the amazing things that Colette brings to the table next week and her tales from the vector and her amazing dragon tales and all of these potential pathways to expansion for your own life. So thank you to all. And we look forward to next month when we'll be back. And Lisa, thank you again.
Thank you, Karen. It's been so fun. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
You've been listening to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan. Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network as she provides energetic shifts and consistent results in every area of life, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. The truth is funny. Visit thetruthisfunny.com for more information. That's thetruthisfunny.com.